Don't do it, Alex. Please don't do it, Bran begged. Poe seemed to be gnashing his teeth.
Alex should not go there. We doesn't want to send her there.
Hello, and welcome back to the sweet, sultry sounds of the Remedial Magic Podcast. My name's Brady, and as always, I'm joined by my brother Baylor and our good friend Delbert. And guys, we have made it back into the studio. Oh, it feels so good.
And by we mean the two most important people of the podcast, me and Brady.
True.
Right, because Baylor's been in his studio the whole time, but...
True.
Man, I bet we sound so good right now.
We better, since we missed a week.
Yeah, well, we did take a bit of a break last week, but we did that because we had no time in our schedule that could actually line up, and... I'm not really complaining about it. It was all right to take a 1 week break, I think.
Agreed.
What about you, Baylor? Do you agree that it was a good time to take a break, or did you spend our normal recording time staring at the ceiling, sad?
Well, no, I don't spend it staring at the ceiling, but I did miss the podcast. I wish it would have worked out, but obviously it didn't. So, it was a good week off. I was able to focus on other things that included partying at a wedding. So, there you go.
Can't complain about that, I suppose.
No, definitely not.
Well, we are here. We're back in the studio. I'm listening to myself in the studio headphones, and boy, do we sound crispy.
It's been a while since we've... heard ourselves, I think.
It's been quite some time. It's been, since the end of May, really, that we've been able to be in the studio, and I'm glad to re-up the quality, and also I enjoy getting to say we're recording from the studio because it confuses people when they try to figure out how the hell we got ourselves a recording studio on the Discord, and depending on who you ask, it's either at the local university or we made enough money from our season one sponsorships to build a studio for ourselves. So however you want to look at it, being back in the studio is great, and we're excited to talk some more about Alexander Quick and the Lands Below. I believe this week we're talking about chapters 21 and 22 of the story written by Inverarity, and... I'm excited to get back into it because there's some really crucial information going on here, as well as Alex gets crucioed, which is always a great time for everybody. So that should be fun. But before we begin, I just wanted to ask the two of you, have you heard any Harry Potter news?
I have.
Okay, spill the beans.
Okay, so this is about 9 days old now. Because we didn't record last week, so I'm bringing it up again. Mads Mikkelsen was asked whether Johnny Depp would be returning to the Fantastic Beasts franchise, and Mads gave a stereotypical answer of, oh, I loved his work in the role, and yada, yada, yada. We'll have to look into it. So probably not, but it does, to me, make me think that another movie is guaranteed.
I feel like it doesn't mean that necessarily.
You're a bad person.
It's cool that they bring this up, but it feels to me like he was just giving a PR answer more than confirming what the existence of the dreaded fourth Fantastic Beasts movie.
Nah, we're in. For sure. 100%.
I personally have a hard time believing that Johnny Depp will step anywhere near the Harry Potter series and Fantastic Beasts.
Oh, I agree with that part.
Oh, I don't know about that. We also all thought that he would never go back to Pirates. It just depends on how much money you're going to give him.
They gave him a lot of money for Pirates.
I don't know. Regardless of whether there's going to be a fourth movie or not, I don't think that Johnny Depp is better at Grindelwald than Mads Mikkelsen was. And again, we're talking about a series that has so many problems with story building, with continuity, with like consistency, and you're going to change the main antagonist look again. You're going to revert to another form again. I just don't see it happening.
Hey, no, I said I don't think that he'll be back. I just think this basically confirms a fourth movie. With Mads, for the record.
Boy, I just don't know. I don't know how can they make a fourth movie based on what they've done, unless what you said before and the rumors of a Dumbledore Grindelwald TV series is going to come out. Then maybe Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them can be an actual Fantastic Beasts movie, and they split it up that way, but I just don't see how they could possibly justify to the studio making another one of these movies. They've been terrible.
Well, I don't know. I mean, yes, they've been bad. Yes, they've been far from what we've ever wanted. But I just don't think they can just leave us out here on this perpetual diving board, you know, waiting to topple into the depths of a ocean filled with sulfuric acid or something like that. You know, I feel like they have to end it if they're.
This sounds like a take from someone who did not love the first two seasons of NBC's Revolution, only to find it canceled completely.
I have no idea what you're talking about. So
I think there's a higher chance of them bringing back the show Revolution than there is of them ever bringing back Fantastic Beasts as an IP.
I don't know if Revolution profited $200 million, though, like the last Fantastic Beasts movie.
I don't know. I just, whatever. If they do bring it back, fine. Don't bring Johnny Depp back.
I don't think they will. No, there's no way.
I don't think so. I think it'd be hard. A hard sell.
I think they should just cast two new people for movies 4 and 5.
Just every movie have a different person play.
Yeah.
Every movie have a different person play Grindelwald.
Yeah.
Sure. They've already got it going, so why not?
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting news. If there's a fourth movie, cool. We'll definitely go see it, and we'll talk about it on the podcast. And if there's not, that's also cool with me. I'm totally indifferent towards the Fantastic Beasts series at this point, so.
Can't wait to see Charlie Hunnam as Grindelwald #4.
Sure. And then maybe Josh Allen can play Grindelwald in the fifth movie. So.
True. Hey, if the critics keep saying the same stuff, it might fit.
No.
Okay. Fine.
No.
I have some wizarding news, some wizarding world news.
Yeah, what's up?
First of all, I know that we talked about the experience in Chicago there. But they're actually opening another experience, a Harry Potter experience, in New York City, I believe. I believe Westchester is in New York City, or close, you know, one of the suburbs, whatever. Regardless, it's in Westchester, New York, on October 22nd, and it is Harry Potter, A Forbidden Forest Experience. And it is a nighttime outdoor experience inspired by the Fantastic Beasts prequel films, and just explores the backstory of Albus Dumbledore, and I'm sure you come in contact with some CGI'd, probably not CGI'd, but, you know, modeled Fantastic Beasts.
I bet it's going to be really cool, just like the thing in Chicago is going to be. I will say that they're certainly producing a lot of these real-world experiences, and that more than anything indicates to me that there's got to be some new shows or movies in the pipeline, because without shows and movies, I don't really think that the hype around these in-person experiences will sustain itself in a way that keeps the fandom alive and growing.
Yeah, this is kind of a tangent here, but I'm a fan of the show Shark Tank, and basically 10 years ago or so now, Mark Cuban got invested into this live-action entertainment company called 1031 Productions. They're mostly famous for, like, the L.A. and New York haunted hayrides. But I tried to convince you guys one summer a long time ago. I don't know if Baylor was a part of this one, this pitch. But they had a haunted or a great horror campout where you showed up at 10 p.m. and you stayed through the night, and there was like people acting as murderers in the woods and things like this, and you had to go on a scavenger hunt. I wish we had done that, and I hope that things like this, whether it be Harry Potter themed or not, continue to be more accessible for people that don't live on the coasts.
That's one thing that makes these tough, right, is going all the way to New York City for this is not going to be really feasible for people from the Midwest like we are. You know, it's a long drive and a long flight. It's expensive to get out there. So it'd be nice if they could bring some of this stuff into the less touristy areas of the country. Still big metropolitan areas, but ones that are closer maybe to where the majority of people not on the coasts live.
Yeah, I mean, if they could have brought it to Denver even for 1 week out of the summer, I think I could have convinced you guys to go.
Yeah, probably.
Probably, yeah.
It is cool, though. I really like the idea that they're bringing these things more and more, these in-person experiences more and more. I think they're really neat.
Yeah, unfortunately, I think with all the money we burned on our studio, we won't be able to do these for quite a while, unfortunately.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Might be two truths and a lie. Maybe we did build a studio.
Before we move on, just a little bit more of Harry Potter news. They released the new Harry Potter Legacy game, or Hogwarts Legacy, excuse me, for pre-order. And with the with this release, they also released a new trailer, which highlights more of the dark side of things. And in the new trailer, not to spoil a whole ton, but you spot some unforgivable curses and also get some glimpses of eerie locations and darker magical creatures. So that's pretty cool. I haven't watched it myself. I just discovered this. Also, with the pre-order, if you pre-ordered the deluxe edition, you will get a 72-hour early access to the game, and the game will release on February 10th, 2023. So big news regarding
that
game.
What an absolute shame that we're not sponsored. That was a great ad read.
It was a great ad read, and what a shame we're not sponsored indeed, but $300 is a lot of money for a pre-order for a game.
It is. Since we're not sponsored, we can talk about that.
It's a lot of money.
Yeah. I am a firm believer of never pre-ordering anything anymore in the gaming industry.
There's a big argument to not pre-order. The fact that they've pushed this back willingly themselves to say we need more time to finish the game certainly should make a person feel more confident in the product you would receive if you did pre-order. I will say that the perks of the pre-order aren't going to be enough to convince me to do something like that. Like, you get a wand and you get like a book that comes with it, as well as the early access, and you get some in-game items and things like that. But I don't think it's worth the extra $230 that you're going to spend on top of the game as it is. And if I can get the full game for the normal price of what a game releases for, that's definitely the route I'm going to take.
Yeah. I'm curious what the normal price will be, but the $300, I mean, this sounds like something that streamers may purchase if they're already not paid to play the game on their streams anyways.
It seems like you guys are talking about the collector's edition, which is the third edition. There's also a standard edition and deluxe edition. It looks like on Steam, the standard edition is $59.99. The deluxe edition, which does provide the early access with some other perks, is $69.99.
Oh. Well then, three days early for $10, maybe.
I didn't realize there was an addition in the middle. I thought it was just the standard and then the big deluxe pre-order bundle.
Yes,
that they're talking about. But
the collector's edition does look pretty sweet. But yeah, if it is $300, I probably won't be buying that myself.
Better come with an entire set of books for $300.
That'd be cool if you could pay that much and get the full set of Harry Potter books with it. That'd be pretty neat.
Yeah, that would be.
I like that. I'm excited for that game. I was disappointed when they pushed it back, but if they're pushing it back so they can polish it more, then I'm totally okay with that as a decision from the studio.
Yeah, I would like to avoid a Harry Potter version of No Man's Sky, to be honest. Or Cyberpunk, I think, had the same issues.
Yeah, Cyberpunk.
I was going to say, can you use a game that I actually know, please? In your explanation.
You don't know
this
No
time.
Man's Sky? That was a great game. Well,
I don't,
okay,
I don't
it
play
wasn't
bad.
On release, but it was okay.
I don't play bad games, Stelbert. That's the thing.
I think it's okay now.
It took like 3 years, but it's finally a decent game, I'm pretty sure.
Huh, yeah.
Good.
Well, regardless of all that exciting news, we do have a conversation to get to. We need to discuss Alexander Quick and The Lands Below, chapters 21 and 22. It's a pretty interesting set of chapters, certainly more interesting than the last chapters that we discussed. Because we get some information, I think, directly about the Lands Below this time, which is really pretty nice as well. So, as a reminder, chapter 21 of this section is called The Obol, and chapter 22 is called 13. It's been a while. I'll go ahead and do the summary just to get us kicked off here, and then what do you guys say we dive right in?
I'm into
Sounds
it.
Sounds good to me.
So, chapter 21 is called The Obol, as I said, and Alex kind of makes a decision to give Darla back her coin after she loses her mind, but she finds out that Darla is sneaking around with John Manuelito, and because Alex is who she is, she has to figure out what they're doing, and so she spies on them, and we see Darla begging John to give her another one of these coins because she lost the first one, and John's not exactly being nice. But they do catch Alex spying on them down in the basement, and that turns into, as we've stated before, book one happens to be the book of people trying to kill Alex, and book two happens to be the book of people torturing Alex, and Darla ends up crucioing Alex in this section just to prove to John that she can do it. Alex and Max have a conversation about this that is pretty civil. And then Alex goes to the library where she talks to Brandon Poe, trying to figure out more about this obol, this coin that she has that belonged to Darla at one point. Chapter 22 then begins. We see more practice with wizard dueling. Doggerel verse makes a return in this chapter, which I thought was interesting. Abraham makes an appearance as well, but not physically in person. And then Dean Grimm wishes Alex a happy birthday, which is kind of disconcerting for Alex, I think. She doesn't really know why Dean Grimm is doing so. Then Alex has a little bit of a birthday party with her friends, as well as some unexpected attendees that I really was surprised about. She gets a broom from Max, which is pretty cool. And then Max invites Alex to go visit his home so she can meet her sister, Julia. And that's kind of where the chapter ends, with Alex pondering whether or not her mother will be okay with her making that trip. And so that's kind of the two chapters as they sit. And this obol thing, this coin that Alex has found, very interesting.
Agreed. Seemingly dangerous, too.
Oh, seemingly very dangerous. I kind of want to jump forward a touch because we find out that Darla wants this coin. And then going forward, we find out from Brandon Poe that this is a coin that you give to a house elf to force it to be your ferryman to take you to the lands below. Why does Darla want this coin if that's what it does?
I was very interested by that, especially because, you know, last week when I asked, well, I guess not last week, 2 weeks ago when I asked my prediction question, Delbert had said something like the obol is needed to cross the River Styx. Which obviously we find out that's just a muggle tale. What the actual thing is, this house elf business. And it's, I, you know, there's so many questions about Darla. Like, why is she doing what she's doing and everything? And it seems like, obviously, she's trying so hard to get in the lands below. I just don't see what's in there for her to be after.
I think the most interesting thing about this is the first time where Darla is doing something that we assume is for her own reason. Like, it's because she wants to do it. We've assumed this whole time that she's stealing Angelique's pet to impress John Manuelito. She's crucioing Alex to impress John Manuelito. She's doing this to impress the Mors Mortis Society. She's doing that to impress the Mors Mortis Society. But she loses the coin, and John's not, like, mad at her about it. He's just annoyed that she's here begging him for another one. So this is her plan, whatever it is, or someone that we don't know's plan.
Right.
And I wonder why she wants it so badly. We don't really know what the lands below is, but it can't be something super good, because Bran and Poe are, when Alex brings up the obol to them and shows them that she has one, they are scared of what's about to happen. They think Alex is going to use this coin to force them to let her get into the lands below, and they beg her not to use it, not to ask them to do this for her, which means to me that there's got to be something dangerous down in the lands below, right? It can't be all just like cotton candy and unicorns in there if Bran and Poe are freaking out so much about it.
Well, didn't the spirit that we saw summoned also come from that?
Presumably, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, so I mean, this isn't a place that most people would want to go, but here's Darla, age 12 or 13, thinking she can conquer the lands below or something. I have no idea.
I would be very hard-pressed to not believe that there's some outside force acting on Darla at this point, like with this whole plan and everything. She has got to be, like, obviously, yes, she's trying to impress John Manuelito. We see that there. They kind of have this moment, like when Alex is, you know, pinned to the ground with the spell, where, like, they, like, stare deeply into each other's eyes, once again getting back into relationships of teenagers. But, like, there's got to be some outside force, some outside being that is persuading Darla to do this stuff. This is not normal 12-year-old, 13-year-old behavior.
It's pretty interesting, because I agree that it's not normal 12- or 13-year-old behavior, but John Manuelito, until Darla proves herself by crucioing Alex, he doesn't seem to care about her plight whatsoever. So I certainly don't think it's him who's influencing this, if there is an influence coming from the outside forcing Darla to do this. John Manuelito doesn't seem to care at all that she wants to get into the lands below. He just wants money.
Yep. I agree. Yeah, I don't think that even after she crucioed Alex, like, I don't think that John really cares about her still. So yeah, I don't think it's him for sure.
My other thought too, and we get kind of a explanation of how obols work and what they do, but maybe Bran and Poe don't include anything, and maybe, and this was my thought on my first read through, Darla is trying to trick Alex to go to the lands below, because for some reason Darla has tried to kill her and failed. We don't know what that reason is, but maybe her attempt to try to kill Alex was a real one.
I suppose that's a possibility.
I actually wrote in my notes a question: should we be scared of Darla? Because it appears that she knows that her crucio wasn't that strong and that Alex was faking it, her reaction to it. And she, you know, says, "Do you want me to really hurt you?" And so I definitely think, in my opinion, there's a little bit more there than we thought previously about Darla being as, quote, weak as she is. And if she's able to control her spells, her unforgivable curses, like the strength of them, then I would think that means she's pretty powerful. But I'm not totally convinced of that.
Yeah, I don't know if Darla even knows what she's doing, like, at the age of 13 or 12, if she even has the awareness of the things that she's trying to do. But the fact that she is putting herself forward into these situations, knowing they're dangerous, knowing that casting Avada Kedavra can kill somebody and doing it anyways, knowing what Crucio does to somebody and doing it anyways, she's not somebody to just brush off and say, well, whatever, she's just an idiot, she's just a stupid 13-year-old girl. She's definitely dangerous in some respect, even if she hasn't been all that effective to this point, right? It only takes once, and she continues to try.
Yeah. And I mean, yeah, when Alex gets back from the events of the night, she immediately tells Anna, says, stay the hell away from Darla. Like, she has lost it, which, fair assumption at that point, to be completely honest with you. I'm, what, 27, 28? I would also be avoiding Darla if I knew about this stuff.
Yeah, I find it interesting that up to this point, I think Alex really has been brushing Darla off as just being stupid. But after this happens, after she tails Darla down to the basement, finds her meeting with John Manuelito, Darla Crucio's Alex when Alex gets caught, Alex resolves at that moment in time that this is the last time I will ever give Darla Dearborn a chance. Like, she swears to be her enemy from this point forward. And I can't believe it's taken this long. Like, at this moment, it sort of reinforces the fact that even though Darla tried to kill Alex at one point, Alex didn't really take it that seriously.
Part of me still wonders if Darla's plan specifically targets Alex, because, like, there's just been so many opportunities. Like you're saying, Alex gave Darla so many chances after the first Avada Kedavra to do damage to her. And like, you know, that could have come in the form of, you know, they were at a Mors Mortis Society meeting together, you know, like they were kind of getting closer before everything went haywire, obviously. And so I don't know, like, I'm not totally convinced yet if her plan specifically is targeting Alex, but I'm sure we'll find out.
It almost reminds me, too, of the Sisters of the House Black that we watched, where it has Bellatrix sitting there trying to cast Avada Kedavra over and over again, but not really meaning it or not understanding exactly how. And I kind of compare that to Darla of how long until she can, same way it happened in that fan movie.
She's, in the course of one chapter, become incredibly interesting.
Agreed.
You know?
Yeah.
Up until this point, she's just another irritation in Alex's eye, and now all of a sudden, she seems to be at the crux of whatever this issue is.
Yep.
I also wonder, too, we haven't really discussed this aspect of relationships between Alex and her friends and students. All of these students didn't know that she was the daughter of Thorn until the last month of the year, and then they went home and all that news spread to all their parents. So maybe they all have different opinions of Alex because of what their parents taught them about Thorn in the meantime. So maybe Darla went home and her parents talked about how heinous his father is, or maybe she found out that her father killed one of her relatives or something like that. So maybe Darla truly does want to kill Alex.
It's a possibility. It absolutely is a possibility. She's going about it in a weird way. I want to jump back to the conversation that Alex has with Bran and Poe. They do freak out, right? They do lose their mind when she shows them the obol. They beg her not to use it, and of course she's not going to use it. She's just trying to figure out what it is. But a couple of interesting things get brought up. We find out that not only is there a lands below, there's also a lands beyond. Presumably, the River Styx does exist. It just doesn't have anything to do with this obol that Alex is talking about. And I find that really interesting, especially that Bran and Poe know sort of how both of these places work.
Yeah. The way I interpreted it was like the lands beyond is where you go, like, when you die. Because they said the lands below and the lands beyond are different because you can come back from the lands below. So that's how I interpreted the lands below. But yeah, it is. They do seem very knowledgeable about this, and especially like what you said earlier, how these house elves had signed a contract long ago where they are the gate people or guides into the lands below for humans. That part definitely surprised me.
I want to take a moment here, and I'm hoping that this will not spoil anything for Baylor. I don't think it does. But Baylor, on mine and Brady's first reread, we kind of freaked out about this idea of the lands below, and we nonchalantly made it canon that the veil that Sirius Black falls through when he dies, the thing in the Department of Mysteries,
mm-hmm.
was a portal to the lands beyond. Do you think this is plausible, or do you think we're insane?
I mean, I could definitely see that being a thing, yeah. Because, I mean, Sirius wasn't able to ever return from the lands beyond if that's where he went.
So, right, and I mean, he did get killed by the Killing Curse, supposedly, but we never got an explanation to what that veil is in the original series. And Brady and I loved trying to figure that out with what Inver already has provided.
It would be fitting, especially given that that portal was in the Department of Mysteries. You know, like that. I think it's, if it were the lands beyond, then it's clear that the people there at the Ministry of Magic still don't understand it, and they were trying to study it themselves.
I will say that the veil that's in the Ministry of Magic, I agree with what you guys are saying about it. In my opinion, it's the biggest mistake J.K. Rowling ever made in the Harry Potter series. She brought it up as this mysterious thing, and then it never got mentioned again. And this is nothing to do with Alexander Quick. My biggest gripe about the Harry Potter series, honestly, is the fact that that veil just shows up, kills Sirius, and then that's it. It's gone. And it could have, that, I really think she could have based the entire Voldemort immortality storyline around something to do with that veil. And it would have made more sense. But that's just a diatribe on my part.
Just to follow up with your side note, my least favorite thing that she ever did was the time turner. Here's all these time turners. You get to use them for one book. Oh, we're destroying all of them.
Right.
Sorry.
Well, it's cool until you realize, wait a second.
Right.
If time travel exists, why haven't we solved this already?
Yep.
But going back to Alex Quick, this lands below place, if it's not the real world, but it's not the afterlife, what is it? You know, what could be down there that's so important that house elves are, by ancient compact, forced to protect it? It's a hard question to answer right now.
No idea.
Yeah.
I don't know the answer to that question. I think it's very dangerous, and I'm guessing it probably stems back, and this is obviously just a guess because I have no idea. My guess would be it stems back from before wand magic was a thing, and that was the lands below was a way that they got some of the magical stuff done. They did some ceremonies or whatever regarding the portals into the lands below. And maybe even sometimes obviously went into the lands below.
It's interesting you say that. You know, part of the reason that Delbert and I have discussed the veil and the ministry is because it strikes me that if there's a portal to the lands below, then it makes sense that there's a important magical building purposefully built on top of it. And so you have the ministry in Britain, you have Charmbridge in the U.S. It makes sense that these are important magical landmarks from a time prior to civilized magical society or whatever, and they built these buildings there to protect these from the influence of outside people or whatever.
Right. Yeah, I agree 100%. It would be, I mean, that's like the best way to protect something, right? Is to put an important building around it. So
you would think, but then at Charmbridge, a bunch of like 11 to 15 year olds go down there and do blood rituals around it. So who knows?
Yeah, right, right. I on the note of the house elf business, does that mean that M is the keeper of the lands below portal there?
I don't know, but she's the only house elf wandering around in the basement.
We do see her in the basement.
And she talks about it, too. She says things come out of the lands below, and I have to take care of them.
Exactly. So,
maybe M's the one behind Darla's plight.
Things get stickier from this point forward.
It's also curious, too, because they say you can return from the lands below. So does it cost an obol to go there and nothing to come out if other things are just coming out? Or is there another toll you have to pay on the way back?
That's true. Yeah, things just got more very excited for sure.
Yeah.
Very excited to read going forward, to learn more about the lands below, assuming that we learn more about it. Assuming Inverardi brings it up instead of mentioning it for one chapter to kill off somebody and then never mentioning it again.
Also, not even to kill someone off since they died before falling through it.
So, but also in this chapter, Alex and Max have a conversation about what happened to her, about Darla Crucioing her and whatever else. And Max basically says he's going to ruin his mission that he's on for the WJD to tell Dean Grimm what's going on down there. So it's a very outright showing of Max's care and love for Alex at this point, right? We've moved fully into you're my sister, I'm your brother, I'm going to protect you territory. And it's pretty nice to see, in my opinion. I don't know about you, Baylor, but the first time I read this, when he mentioned bringing this up, I was kind of excited to see what Dean Grimm would do if she knew about this. Of course, it doesn't happen because Alex tells Max, no, don't do that, I'll be fine.
Yeah, I feel like the book would probably be a lot shorter if adults were involved with a lot of this stuff. But
that is the nature of things.
That's the nature of any wizarding book for sure.
Yeah. I agree. I definitely was interested to see, you know, like, obviously Dean Grimm would have reacted probably pretty harshly, but it would have been interesting to see what would have come from this. Like, I'm sure that would have discovered a lot of stuff that's hidden from our view currently.
It would have been nice to see, I think. And really, it was kind of nice to get Dean Grimm back involved a little bit. She hasn't exactly been a major part of this book. It's because Alex hasn't been in trouble as much. But the prospect of Dean Grimm walking into a Mors Mortis Society meeting and just cleaning house, I like that idea. Unfortunately, it doesn't happen. But it is nice to see Max caring for Alex so much that he's willing to compromise his own mission to keep her safe going forward. That chapter, we've talked about everything important from it. It's a pretty crazy chapter when you think about it in the context of a 13-year-old girl trying to buy a coin that purchases you entrance to a different realm, a different dimension, the next basement layer of Charmbridge. Who really knows what it is, but when you package all that together with the information that Bran and Poe give about how they're the guards, they're the ferrymen who can take people back and forth, it's all of a sudden like gone from a rivalry, a story about a rivalry between two teenage girls to what the hell is going on underneath Charmbridge. You know what I mean?
Right.
I'm also going to say this, and I'll say this once. House elves are terrible at their job. They should have turned Alex in instantly.
Yeah, I do think there's a little flexibility in their compact, their agreement with the school in this situation.
Yeah, she's got an uber dangerous illegal coin, and they're like, you should tell someone. And she says no, and they say, oh, okay.
Well, maybe a little bit of creative liberty being taken being taken by Inverarity here.
Once again, you know, the book would be much shorter if that was the case.
It is. I mean, it absolutely is true, but Delbert's right that if Bran and Poe were doing probably their whole job that they're owed at the school, they would have told somebody by now.
Yeah.
Even their absolutely. Direct superior and Mrs. Minder, right?
Yeah. There was one thing I wanted to bring up at the end of this chapter when Max and Alex are talking. Do you think that Max knows what Darla wants with the Obel? Like, maybe it's come up in a Mors Mortis Society meeting or something like that?
I don't know why he would know, really, if she's been sneaking around behind the scenes with John Manuelito trying to get this figured out. I don't really know that she would bring that up in a setting where there's more than just her and John Manuelito present.
Right.
I think he might just know, to be honest, just from his upbringing and who his father is.
Like he just knows like what an obel is used for and probably why access. Darla wants it.
Yeah, because, I mean, he seems to come from a wealthy-ish family, so he probably has access to things that normal wizards and definitely Muggleborns wouldn't have access to. I mean, we see in both Harry Potter and in Alex Quick that there's restricted sections in the library, but is there a restricted section on books you can order? I kind of doubt it, and if I was in the wizarding world, I'd be ordering a lot of those books if I had money just to read.
Right, absolutely.
I agree with you guys that he probably knows what an obel is and maybe the effects of it. I don't think he knows Darla's inner motivations.
Right.
That being said, it's time for a more cheery conversation because it's Alex's 13th birthday.
Yeah, yeah.
Woo! It's not going to be that cheery.
It's not really that cheery. Alex is getting better at being a witch, at being a witch proficient in defending herself and attacking other people. She's doing some cool magic in this chapter again.
She is. Yeah, it's these wizard duels, whether they're on broom or whether they're on foot with these older students, are really fun to read about.
I agree. And on top of that, we said it in last episode, but again, she's getting so much more out of this independent practice with the Blackburgs kids than she's ever getting out of her school classes, it seems. She has advanced so far because of this, rather than sitting in Shirtlift's class toiling away or in Gru's class toiling away, you know?
Well, I mean, she's able to cast Accio, I believe, in this chapter, and we know in Harry Potter that even fourth years didn't know how to cast Accio, and it took Harry tons of time to learn it and figure it out. So she is well on her way to understanding more advanced magic.
I do like how cheeky she is when she does cast the Accio charm, trying to catch Martin off his guard.
And well, she does catch him off his guard a little bit, and then she also casts Levy Corpus, which she's only practiced once or twice.
Does she cast it, or does Martin in response to her?
She casts it to catch Martin.
Oh, yep. Interesting. Okay.
So she's doing some cool stuff, but I think maybe more importantly in this chapter, doggerel verse makes its return.
And it's not a pleasant one.
It's doggerel verse comes back because Alex needs to keep this obel away from Darla, and we find out from Max that Darla has been apparently using the Accio charm to try to get the obel back into her possession. At least that's what's implied. So Alex's solution to that is to put it on the floor, the obel, cast the deadweight charm on it, then use doggerel verse to make sure it stays in place, then to put her dresser on top of it. So she's really not taking any chances here with this obel. She doesn't want Darla getting it from her, but the doggerel verse, the rhyme is just, you can tell maybe that Inverarity's a little out of practice with doggerel verse because so is Alex.
Yeah, that's kind of my thought, is practice makes perfect, and she is out of practice.
I mean, it kind of rhymed.
Oh, it does rhyme.
It does rhyme, especially if you rhyme you with you.
It's just a mouthful.
Yeah, and also rhyming you with you.
Well, it says, she says, Obel, stay glued to the floor. I command you to ignore any summons or attempts to lift you until I pick you up or gift you. The coupled words there do rhyme.
Yeah,
lift
but
and
still
gift
you
and
you.
Lift you and gift you.
Floor and do, ignore. Ooh.
Do rhyme. But I have to say that I've been so content with her not using doggerel verse that when this showed up, it was a bit jarring.
I was surprised, I guess, but at the same time, I think it's smart given the fact that it seems like the deadweight spell wears off over time. Maybe that's just on people. I'm not sure.
No, I think that's absolutely correct, that it is smart of her to do this. I just wasn't ready for it.
Yeah, I mean, it's just another layer of protection, but boy, did I hate the way she said it.
So she pins this to the floor with some doggerel verse, but more importantly, I think in this little section, the morning of her birthday, is that Abraham Thorne makes an appearance. Not a physical appearance, but rather he somehow communicates his thoughts to her through the locket that he gifted her when he saw her in the forest.
Yeah.
Did you guys quite understand how they were communicating here?
I didn't even think he was using the locket. I just thought it was some form of, like, telepathy, basically.
But why was the locket shimmering then? Like, it had extra shimmer on it today.
Yeah, maybe something with that, or maybe, like, that is when he wants to contact her or something. I don't know.
I do think it was with the locket because of that shimmer, and then also when she closed the locket at the end of the conversation, it cut him off mid-sentence, basically.
That's true.
That's true, but then why could... Or wait, does he not talk until she opens the locket?
Correct.
Oh,
correct.
So yeah. Maybe it is through the locket then. Okay. Yeah.
So it's like some kind of weird... It's like a sending spell almost, but it works through the locket somehow. Like he can channel his thoughts into his portrait or something like that.
I also enjoyed my wording when she does close the locket and I just said she hangs up on him.
Yeah.
It's a telephone call or something.
She kind of does. He wishes her happy birthday. He tells her he'll get her a gift. She makes the comment that if you have to ask me what I want for my birthday on my birthday, then why would you even bother? Which is a good point. But I think the most important part of this conversation is he says, please wear the locket. You need to wear the locket. And so I am very curious about why.
I was actually just going to bring that up, and I think, especially jumping ahead a little bit, we find out that Max or his other siblings haven't been given a locket. And so it I think it's somehow like, you know, we saw the Thorn Circle last book protect her. I'm almost wondering if this locket is another form of protection now that the Thorn Circle is broken.
I think it has to be something protective with the way he's desperate for her to be wearing it. He's not very pleased that she hasn't been wearing it. It certainly, he tells her he can't use it to like read her mind or see her thoughts or whatever. So I'm just very curious about that. Like even if it is protective, why doesn't he just say that? Hey, you need to wear this so that I can offer you some protection going forward.
I also don't know, and I'm moving into the next part alongside what we've been talking about. I don't know if it was planned for Inverarity from the beginning to do this for this reason, but as soon as she's done talking to Abraham Thorne, she then runs into Diana Grimm's twin sister. And Diana Grimm, as we know, has been hunting Abraham Thorne. And I just kind of like the fact that she hears her father and then immediately sees the face of the woman that's hunting him.
Well, especially after she had just talked to her father about how he probably doesn't want her to tell Dean Grimm that they've been communicating with each other.
Right.
Why do you think Dean Grimm makes a special appearance in this chapter?
Why did she take her out for ice cream?
Exactly. I mean, Dean Grimm has hardly been in this book at all. And now she's making a special appearance just to tell Alex happy birthday? What's up with that?
We saw it last book as well, didn't we? We saw her.
She did, yeah. She did come over and tell Alex happy birthday in the last book, too. Why is she doing that?
I mean, there's got to be something more about Alex, right, than other normal kids. I mean, her first excuse was she didn't want Alex to feel special so she didn't get in more trouble and find out about her father, even though that backfired significantly. But it seems like Alex is much more of a focus for the Governor General and his people than other kids are, including Alex's own siblings.
I agree. There's something... If Dean Grimm doesn't go out of her way to tell people happy birthday and then she's doing it to Alex 2 years in a row, taking Alex out for ice cream, there's something extra going on. For sure.
Maybe
she also brings her cat. I don't know.
Maybe Dean Grimm is practicing illegitimacy or whatever it is on her.
Oh, legitimacy.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Maybe that's interesting.
Maybe the locket blocks that. I don't know.
I don't know. It's really hard to say for sure what's going on, but Dean Grimm wishes Alex a happy birthday, and Alex notes that it's weird, just like we're doing, kind of. But we find out that Alex is turning 13 is a big deal because it's a powerful number in magic. You learn it in arithmancy. It's important for divination. We find out from the Ozarkers that you're not even considered. At one point in time, you weren't even considered a witch or a wizard until you turned 13. And so, or maybe we find that out from Max. But regardless, Alex turning 13 is a big deal, I guess. Maybe that's why Dean Grimm is telling her happy birthday.
Yeah, apparently it's an important birthday.
That's my favorite number, but so go, Alex.
I just had a new conspiracy theory, if we'd like to venture into this.
Sure.
The locket is a reduced-size vanishing cabinet for Abraham and his followers to sneak into the school and assassinate the headmaster.
Sure.
Wow.
Sure.
I don't know how much diving we need to do into that one, because...
After breakfast, Alex goes and has a birthday celebration with her friends, Anna, David, the Ozarkers. Max is there to surprise her, as well as Beatrice and Martin. For some reason, Lord only knows why, Stuart and Torvald are there, as well as some others that just kind of wandered in, wondering what was going on, and decided to stay for the festivities, but... It's a pretty nice thing for Alex's friends to do, frankly.
True. Everything was super nice for her, except that no one told her not to try to blow out the candles, and she looked the fool like I did on my 13th birthday when my mother bought non-extinguishable candles.
Yeah. She tries to blow out the candles. It doesn't work.
Ruined my life.
They tell her that she's supposed to make a wish and then not use magic for the rest of the day. So... What do you guys think Alex would wish for on her birthday?
Her mom to accept her.
I was about to say, I bet she would wish for parents that care about her.
To stand at the side of Abraham Thorne as his princess general commanding his forces.
More realistically, I bet that Alex would wish for an answer to the Darla situation. Most likely.
Yeah, probably.
I will say that she gets some pretty good gifts, but she does get a new broom, which is a pretty cool gift.
Yep. Yeah. Not to jump ahead to the prediction, but I nailed that one on the head.
I believe that you did, yes, if I remember correctly. So she gets a new broom from Max, which is really cool. She gets a new cape. She gets a charms book from Anna. She gets a self-polishing dress shoes from Beatrice and Martin. So she gets some pretty cool gifts, but really the broom is the star of the show. In fact, so much so that pretty quickly afterwards, her and Max go try the broom out. And Alex immediately breaks every school rule about flying brooms that she can. Her and Max get to have another conversation on their own, this time about the broom. But Max also invites Alex to travel with him back home for spring break?
Easter vacation.
That surprised me.
Me too. First time I read it.
I'm excited.
Yeah, I'm excited too, because it gives Inverarity an opportunity to explore more of this Wizarding world, which I always enjoy.
Agreed. And that's one thing I love that we just did not get really out of the original series. We just got England, like just basically London and Hogwarts was our two areas that we visited for the most part.
Yeah, and so the fact that we don't know for sure, but we think Alex is going to get to travel with Max back to his home to meet her other sister, to meet one of Abraham Thorne's former wives, and also to experience more of the wizarding world than we've gotten to see so far is very exciting. Now,
absolutely.
A quick short prediction from you, Baylor, and maybe you cover it in your actual prediction, but do you think Claudia will be okay with Alex traveling to visit Max?
I do,
Max's home?
I do.
Imagine if she just said no and that was all we ever heard about it.
Alex would just forge the letter.
It'd be
no
terrible.
Doubt.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
It's not as if Claudia would care if Alex went.
Yeah.
So.
Listen, for what it's worth, I think Alex is still like my least favorite character, which is really a shame now because I have to deal with her twice a week. When we do this and reskinned, renamed Lizzie during D&D.
Well, sure. It's quite close, but it's exciting that Alex has this opportunity because it means we have this opportunity as well.
True.
That's kind of where the chapter ends. It's kind of where the section ends, to be honest.
Yeah.
Not bad.
No, it's okay. The first chapter was a little bit more
dark
following the beginning of the book.
First chapter is much more interesting to me.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yep, I agree.
Well, with that being said, who's the ARC MVP? Delbert?
Brandon Poe. They provided some information that I don't think we would have ever gotten. Also made me think about it, and there's probably a lot of stuff that elves know that is not common knowledge for wizards because they're just too bigoted to ask.
Yeah, that's a guarantee. Right, that's even established in the main series.
Right.
So yep. It's certainly true here as well.
Nice pick.
Baylor, who was your ARC MVP?
So I went with probably the easy pick. I went with Maximilian, of course. And I just thought he was a cool guy, you know? On more of a serious note, he was cool for defending Alex. His gift was awesome because it was a broomstick, presumably maybe the best broom that's available. I'm not sure. And then I thought it was a neat brotherly thing of him to consider Alex, that Alex might not want to both go home or stay at the school for Easter. So, you know, his invite was pretty nice of him.
Yeah, I think he's the natural choice, to be honest.
I feel like he is the one that makes the most sense.
Yeah. Without question. Well, my ARC MVP is Mother Goose.
Mother Goose.
Mother Goose, the inventor of nursery rhymes everywhere, which allowed Alex to create this wonderful doggerel verse for us to read in this chapter. Shout out to Mother Goose.
As someone who has chosen me as the ARC MVP, I'd like to say, unacceptable.
Well, that's who I'm going with. So.
did she base the doggerel verse off of a Mother Goose nursery rhyme?
I just think that's why nursery rhymes have been popularized.
I just think Mother Goose is the inventor of all. If you've ever thought of two words that rhyme, Mother Goose thought of it first.
Oh, true.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
What about like the stuff Eminem has made up, like orange and door hinge?
Exactly.
Mother Goose was on that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Orange and Dorange, you know how that goes.
Yeah.
So that's my ARC MVP is Mother Goose. We also need to rename this ARC. Baylor, would you like to start off with your title for this one?
You know, I struggled mightily with this one, so I'm not sure if it'll be the chosen selection, but my ARC title was Stealth Check with Disadvantage, because one, D&D is important to us right now, and it seems like two, Alex, every time she sneaks around, she gets caught.
Unbelievable.
I like it.
That was pretty good.
I like it for us. I don't know if I like it as the grand title.
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
Delbert?
I went with these two chapters. They kind of fit in the middle of two sections, I think. It ended the dark section that we had been going through and then kind of went into this nice section of Alex is about to go on to something new. She just had her birthday. So I wanted to call it the dark and the light.
That's pretty good. I like that. It's not bad at all. As far as my renaming of the ARC, I decided to call this one Dirty Money.
Possibly your best yet.
Maybe my best ever.
Yeah. I was going to say the Redemption Tour is in full swing.
It fits both chapters, too, because like the gift that she gets from her parents on both Claudia and I believe what's probably coming from Abraham is just money.
Yeah.
So it's pretty good.
I definitely considered that too when I made that title.
Did you?
Yeah.
Your eyes tell me maybe not.
Wasn't at all just thinking about the obol, but
right.
Close enough. So there you go. ARC MVP, Mother Goose. Name of the ARC, Dirty Money.
Beautiful. No casting.
Yeah, no casting this week because we're going to be doing a couple of castings in the next couple of weeks, I believe.
Yes.
And speaking of the next couple of weeks, really the next section of chapters we're going to talk about is five chapters long, which
very
is
big.
Too much for us to talk about in one episode. So we're going to split it into two sections. But that doesn't stop you, Baylor, from needing to make a prediction about all five as one chunk together.
Luckily for you, though, you can exert all your brain power this week because you won't have to make a mid-episode prediction in the middle of those five chapters.
That's great. I'm not convinced that this will be great. So,
well, before we get there, we should grade your one from last week. So would you please remind us of what that was?
So for my prediction, things will become clearer regarding Darla's situation. Knowing that the obol was hers and has to deal with the River Styx, Alex and company will begin to connect the dots about what has been influencing Darla thus far this year. Furthermore, in order to either get the obol back or try and find who has it, Darla will have to reveal her intention for Alex or others to someone or Alex, if that makes sense. I.e., she will have to hint at what she is planning this year, like why she's doing what she's doing. Regarding the 13 chapter, Alex will have her birthday and turn 13, obviously. Knowing Max gets her an awesome gift, I personally think it will be an ode to Prisoner of Azkaban and will be a new broomstick, given also their duels last chapter. Given that it's her birthday, I also think that Abraham Thorne will make another appearance. And then finally, Alex will continue practicing and getting to know Martin and Beatrice.
That was
pretty good.
Pretty good, yeah. I have to say.
I'll say this
good.
Much. I'm not holding the River Styx against him since I baited him in his question.
Yeah, no, I wasn't going to hold that in a negative way either. Hearing this prediction again, I don't have anything to nitpick about.
I have one minor thing.
What's that?
Darla's plans have not become clear to us.
That is true, actually.
Past that, she did tell John Manuel Leto while Alex was listening about the obol and how she needs to get it back. It was her birthday. Max got her a broom. Assumingly, with the wizard duels, she is getting to know Bia and Martin. So, I mean, I think it fires on all cylinders except that we still don't really know what Darla's doing.
So what would you rate this one, Delbert?
Before you do, can I make a counterpoint to your point, Delbert?
Yeah, let's hear it.
You say that Darla's plans are not being revealed. And yes, obviously they have not been fully revealed. But before this chapter, did we know she wants to get in the lands below?
No, but it's still not clear why.
I know, but part of her plan is to get in the lands below. Just saying.
Part of. I agree. That's why I'm giving you a 9.5.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I was going to go with 9.5 as well, actually. I was going to go with 9.5 even before you brought that up, Delbert. So.
Yeah. My thing is, while you didn't get everything, it would have been very hard to as well, so I'm not even going to knock you a full point.
Yeah. I think 9.5 is fitting and fair in this situation.
That brought my average up to a 6.2 from a 5.7. So that was
ooh,
nice.
Above an F.
We're getting there. What about your prediction for the next set of chapters, which is 5 chapters long, chapter 23 through 27. Chapter 23 is called The Roanoke Underhill. Chapter 24 is called Croatoa. Chapter 25 is called Colonials and Indians. Chapter 26 is called The Cotillion. And chapter 27 is called Her Father's Bidding. Do you have any questions about that?
I do. For Delbert, do we learn more about Max's mission in these chapters?
No. Would you like to play some Exploding Snap?
I don't think we can in the Muggle world.
Unfortunate.
Brady, how many new cultures do we meet in the next arc?
Like two or three.
Okay. So I'm not going to lie to you guys. This prediction, my last prediction was 7 sentences for 2 chapters. This week is 3 sentences for 5 chapters because I have no idea what's happening.
I didn't know where that was going, but where it went is what I'm happy with.
I was expecting a 2-page guess after how you introed that.
No. Anyways, for my prediction, Alex will head to Croatoa with Max. I believe that's what it's called. To spend the Easter holidays with Max and his family. Alex will learn about the 2 cultures that Brady mentioned. 2 or 3 cultures, I guess. But if it is 2, I think it will be the Roanoke people and the old colonials. Probably meet some bigots while she's there. And then finally, Alex will once again be contacted by Abraham Thorne. And potentially do some of his bidding for him. In the form of a mission.
Well, all right.
We've spent so long thinking about Max's mission that we didn't think about asking about Alex's mission.
Yes.
And now we pay the price.
Unbelievable. How do you think Abraham's going to contact Alex?
I honestly wouldn't be surprised if he just shows up. Because, you know, he's going to be at... she's going to be at Max's, you know, house. So
nice. He's just going to waltz into his ex-wife's house. That's sick.
I feel the way Max was talking at the end of the end of chapter 22, that there's potential that there's an understanding there between his mom and Abraham. But we'll see.
I'm here for
we'll
it.
We'll see. She seems
we
to
will
be
see
a,
indeed.
She seems to be a bit more open to him than Claudia is for sure.
I guess we'll find out next week when we talk about chapters. I believe we're going to do chapters 23, 24, and 25 next week. And then the following week, we'll finish with chapters 26 and 27. So big stuff coming, covering a lot of ground in this book in the next 2 weeks. And I think after we finish chapter 27, there's only, 10 chapters left? So this book is coming to a close so much faster than the first one did.
The first one, especially in the middle of the year, seemed to drag a little bit. It was reading it very quickly the first time through was a little bit more of a pleasurable experience with book one. And I do think that book two, while having been more entertaining the whole way through, has also been a lot more fun since we can read two, three, or five chapters in one sitting if we want to.
It's true.
I would have to agree.
We're not quite there as far as the anniversary of our podcast being published, but we're awfully close to the anniversary of when we started recording this thing as well. So that's pretty exciting.
Yeah.
But that's a ways off, so we still have time to plan the celebration. As far as this episode of the podcast goes, it's over. I've been Brady.
Not quite.
Oh, come on.
We never shouted out our social medias.
No, you're going to ruin my bit over that.
Yeah.
Fine, do it.
All right. Email me at remedialmagicpodcast@gmail.com and join the Discord. It's been pretty active the last couple weeks, and we've been complained at for missing last week 4 times.
And our other
socials. Also, we have Instagram and Twitter. Also, we have a link tree. Also,
we have a Facebook.
We have a Facebook. Also, the Fast Five podcast has made a rebuttal to us saying that we can do a meetup based on their podcast. And now they've said that if any of their fans email us, we'll give them $100. And that's fine, but I will be stealing the $100 from the members of the Fast Five podcast.
With Accio or?
With violence.
Oh, okay. Good thing there's only one of the members that lives near us.
Right, so the podcast will live on after we're done.
Right.
But with that being said, this episode is over.
Good night.
I've been Brady.
I've been Delbert.
I've been Baylor.
Good night.